Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami iti namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paskatya Desitarane. So before we begin our reading tonight, I would like to read you something that Srila Prabhupada has said. In one sense, I feel for myself, and perhaps you feel also, that this subject matter of this beautiful Dan Kelly Leela is a little tiny bit too advanced for us, because it is like drinking gallons and gallons and gallons of honey and cream. And some people are already on diets, and some people can't digest, and some people don't like to drink honey and cream. But actually, a drink made of honey and cream, you can add a little black pepper and some cardamom and some other fragrances, is considered by the denizens of heaven to be a divinely flavorsome drink. And similarly, for those great devotees who Srila Rupa Goswami is seeing in his audience, the devotees whose hair is standing on end, or they're fainting, or they're sitting stunned, or they're running around in a wild kind of ecstatic state. For that class of devotees, with that class of speaker speaking these wonderful pastime verses, I think it would be a very wonderfully different experience than perhaps we are capable of. But I was thinking too that sometimes a young child draws a picture. They draw a picture of their mother and their father, and you see when they draw the hands, they're underdeveloped artistically, so they make little stick figures. And if you ask them, who is this? They tell you, this is my mother and my father and my brother and my sister. And to an artist, an expert artist with an expert artist's eye, he may see on one side that this is a childlike drawing. But he may also appreciate the enthusiasm and the sincerity of the child in trying to learn how to draw. So I personally feel that we ourselves as an audience and myself as a speaker have to consider ourselves like that, like children who are wishing to sincerely, to the best of our ability, appreciate this transcendental literature, not because it is just our personal interest, but because Srila Prabhupada wants us to understand the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Not all at once, that is true, but gradually. Srila Prabhupada says, in spiritual loving sentiments induced by yoga maya, Krishna and the gopis of Braj forget themselves in spiritual rapture. The reason why the Lord displays his Rasa Leela and also his Dan Kelly Leela is essentially to induce all fallen souls. Are we fallen souls?
Yes.
Yes. To induce all fallen souls to give up their diseased morality and their religiosity, and to attract them to the kingdom of God, to enjoy reality. So amazing as it is to us as fallen souls, these are not just stories. They are not just something that has been written long ago and hard to understand. But this is actually Srila Rupa Goswami describing the transcendental nature of reality. So now we shall begin. Okay. So yesterday, we heard, actually if we go back to the beginning, we heard how the girls were going with their pots of ghee to the sacrifice arranged at Govindakund. And Radha was thinking it would be so wonderful if Krishna would come and block our way. She was thinking and speaking only of Krishna as they were walking along. And meanwhile, Nandi Mukhi had been sent by Purnamasi to bring Krishna and his friends to a particular place. And Vrinda brought the gopis to the same place. Everybody present actually wants Radha and Krishna to be together. But isn't it mysterious how they're having such a big quarrel? And this quarrel will continue all of tonight and tomorrow as well? It's quite amazing. And Krishna says that this particular mood, this mixture of emotions that Srimati Radharani is exhibiting, is millions of times more enjoyable to him than if she was submissive. And therefore, everybody is playing their parts. So first Lalita, as we heard, tried to speak nicely. She decided that was the best approach. And Krishna didn't take her very seriously, and he explained that he was not independent. He was like bound and shackled by the emperor. And he explained also that he had to collect these tolls. It was his duty to do so. And then Lalita, very cleverly and expertly, suggested to the gopis and Radha to put down their pots for a few minutes and they would discuss this matter. Then Radha started insulting Krishna. She called him an insignificant, bold, and reckless fellow. And Krishna became quite angry with her in a transcendental way. And he was saying to her equally strong words. And he warned her that she should not call the toll gate collector a toll gate peon. This was a little bit demeaning. Then both sides recalled examples of how they defeated each other previously. Krishna, he had been defeated by Lalita, and of course Krishna had easily defeated these proud girls himself. Then Nandi Mukhi arrived because she had disappeared into the background before the gopis arrived, so she could appear somewhat impartial. So she arrives with a message from Purnamasi. And the message is that because these beautiful girls are going to a special sacrifice with their golden pots of ghee glistening on their beautiful heads, that Krishna should be lenient with his tax. And Krishna feigned a smile and said, "All right. Instead of charging them 3 gold coins, I will charge them only 1. Then a verbal battle went on between Radha and Krishna. And everybody present enjoyed the exchange between them. Krishna tried to touch Srimati Radharani. And she became very angry. And then he claimed that if she wanted, she could give herself to him instead of the tax. And she ridiculed him for this and said, "Oh, you're so kind. But of course, I will not agree." Then after that, Lalita stepped in again. And Lalita started becoming very strong with Krishna by asking him a question. She said, Your friend said, Nandi Mukhi said, that these girls are worth more than 8,400,000 tankas of gold, which was the the fee that Krishna had calculated, a huge amount. So then how can you take Radha, because she's so much more than 8,400,000, so you're stealing by taking her? And Krishna couldn't answer that. So therefore he diverted the attention to a sound that he made up and suggested to everybody by the hints and by his whispering to Subal that maybe the emperor was getting a little angry. So Subal went to see, and he came back with Ujjala, who had a letter from the emperor, a letter written on a kitaki bud. And at Krishna's request, he's so clever, he's so vaidagda, he's so expert, he's so charming. At Krishna's request, this letter was placed in his hand and he read it to himself. And the gopis became eager to know what was in the letter, and then Krishna read this imaginary letter out loud to them. And at the end of the letter, as he was reading the letter from the emperor, who was very angry because these defiant girls were wandering here and there, at the end of the letter, he said that the king, the emperor said, if you find these girls cheating, you should charge them 100 times the tax. 100 times. So the tax is going up. And then Krishna, in a very tricky and devious way, decided that he had discovered a way that the girls were cheating. And he said that their beautiful bodily forms, all covered very chastely in cloth, actually underneath they were concealing two more pots, two more kumbhas were underneath, and therefore they were smuggling. Smugglers. These girls were smugglers. And now he was going to revise that tax. You see, because he had to get quite high, because Lalita Devi had made a statement that had pushed the barriers of what these gopis were worth. So Krishna then calculated and recalculated and came to another figure. And this figure was 5 billion gold coins. And Radha asked him jokingly, you don't seem to have a container big enough for all your coins. And Krishna said, don't be so joking with me. So he asked them to pay. Then Vishakha decided to offer Vrinda. Now this was very important because Vrinda already belongs to Krishna. She's a duty or a messenger. And her place is in Nandagram. And her business is to bring Radha and Krishna together, but she favors Krishna. So when Vishakha offered Vrinda to Krishna, Krishna was thinking, what are they doing now? They're offering me my Vrinda? And he said, this is foolish. It's just like if you want to offer me my beautiful shark-shaped earrings. And he ridiculed the gopis. And then the gopis asked Vrinda, Vrinda, whose side are you on here? And Krishna gave a little look to Vrinda. And Vrinda understood the message. And she said very, very firmly, I am on the side of Vrindavan Ishwari. Then the girls were very pleased. And Madhu Mangal had one idea in his mind, because all along he's been trying to bribe the girls to get some of their ghee, because he likes ghee and sugar candy together. So he said to them, if you give me a bribe, I can reduce this tax. After all, it's a little absurd, 5 billion gold coins. So then Madhu Mangal, he's a little silly, he's joking, playful. So he comes up to Krishna and he finds some foolish idea that I know how to curb the pride of a billion angry gopis, and I also know how to worship a billion cows. So You should give me what you've never given me before. You should give me 1 billion gold coins. And Krishna remains silent. Madhu is being a little silly. And Madhu Mangal took this as actually a sign that Krishna agreed because he didn't say anything. So he turns to Vishakha and he says, you see, no, saying nothing means agreement. So now give me my sugar candy, because the word was sakaram, which means sugar candy. But it also means I promise to give to you. So when Vishakha said, I promise to give to you, she didn't say what. And Madhu took it as sugar candy. And so when he put out his hands, Vishakha dropped some broken clay pot in his hands. And he was very angry. And he said, now I will get my revenge. And this is where we were last night. Now, Madhu didn't go any further with getting his revenge right then. But Krishna said to Madhu Mangal, I am Madhusudan. I am a black bumblebee. And I will seize this Radha bee as the tax. Only this beautiful girl Radha should be offered to me. Now, Chitra is very, very respectful and very intelligent. So Chitra says, O great hero of Gokul, previously, in last night's reading, Krishna at one point, he said that these gopis were so beautiful that they carried the weight of unparalleled beauty. They were unlimitedly beautiful. And they carried the weight of unparalleled beauty. So she said, therefore, if we're unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly, then how can any one of us unlimitedly beautiful girls, how can any one of us be taken as payment for 500 crores? So again, you see, Krishna puts up his tax, and one of the gopis asks this question, how can you take one of us for only 5 billion gold coins? We are unlimitedly beautiful. Krishna doesn't know what to say again. And then Vrinda says, Chitra, you are so clever. You have trapped the wild elephant with the tender vines of your sweet words. Madhu Mangal says, oh, girls, oh, foolish girls, we greatly insult the emperor of the forest when we consider that his use of the word 100, because the emperor said, you remember, he said, if you find them cheating, and Krishna found they were cheating, then you should raise the tax 100 times. So Madhu Mangal says, if you think that the use of the word 100 literally only means 100, this is actually quite offensive to the emperor of the forest. Because when he says 100 in his statement, of course he really actually means hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. So when you literally take it as only 100, when it's supposed to mean countless, countless hundreds, then you offend the emperor of the forest. Krishna says, well said, my friend, well said. He says, today, by feeding us sweet words, you have become the master of the kitchen. He says, what you say is true. Now, Madhu has got his revenge, yes? He say, what you say is true. His Majesty embraces only countless wealth. So even though all you girls together, all of you together, are not even worth this tax, a countless tax, still, I will keep only this one. And he points to Radha. And he says, for as the moon increases towards the Purnima, so this beautiful girl will increase in value. Radha laughs sarcastically and she says, alas, alas, the forest of Vrindavan, where so many young girls would pick flowers to worship their deities, is now attacked by the king of elephants. If you remember, Krishna said, the king of elephants can uproot young girls very easily. So Vrindavan has become a dangerous place. And the only place left for girls like ourselves has become this valley of Govardhan. But now, unfortunately, this king of tax collectors has set up this bogus tax collecting station just to harass us. To whom can we cry for help? Krishna said, you refuse to pay the toll? You insult the toll collector. I think you desire to begin a battle here on the slopes of Govardhan Hill. Radha says, charming boy, how much can we tolerate? When wood is rubbed together again and again, fire is born, even from sandalwood. So it is no one can blame us. You are harassing us and harassing us. No wonder we're so angry with you. Krishna says, what is the use of clever words? Words that fool only fools. Devi, be kind. Either pay me the toll I wish or fight. Vrinda says, you are a powerful warrior. How can these weak girls fight with you? Krishna says, oh, Vrinda, who wanders in the forest, you do not know the truth. Each of these gopis is like an army of Kamadevas. Radha says, clever boy, now we see that your toll gate is merely a pretext meant to bewilder noble girls. What more need be said? Protected by my friends, I will now leave for the yajna. Krishna says, O restless-eyed girl, it will be difficult to pay tax has already devoured you. It will be very difficult for you to leave. Lalita says, proud fellow, just watch as these clever, vine-like girls walk away. Having crushed to pieces the tax of the emperor, now, go and complain to your emperor. Krishna says, I am a mighty armed hero. Why do I need to complain to the emperor? This lion-like Krishna can crush the pride of even an elephant. So how much effort does this lion need to make to devour a herd of does? Radha says, "Friends, we have taken enough rest. Let us quickly pick up our pots and leave." Krishna says, "Subal, quickly snatch the 5 pots and put them on my toll booth to decorate my toll booth. When this is done, I will personally collect this girl, Radha." So Subal walks over to Lalita. The girls are getting ready to leave. And Subal says, "Oh, Lalita, these pots, they must be very heavy for you. So therefore, I will carry these pots and place them over here at the toll station so that you girls can proceed with ease." Lalita glances at him. You cannot imagine when Lalita is angry. She is so angry. She looks at him and she says, "To hell with you. What brave person would dare to snatch something from Lalita even when she is asleep?" Subal starts to get a little nervous and he starts to look back at Krishna. He's a little bit unsure of himself here. He says, he goes back to Krishna and says, my friend, I'm the only person here, you know, and how can I alone carry 5 pots? So you come with me and your friends and we'll each carry 1 pot together." And Krishna says, "Sakha, your name is Subal, which means very strong. And yet in truth, you are very, very weak. You've become frightened by Lalita's empty words." And Subal smiles playfully and he says quietly to himself, "It is easy to increase one's pride by speaking empty words. Everyone saw your courage, Krishna, when you played dice with Radha and announced an unfair victory. Then Lalita snatched your flute and you hid your Kustaba jewel. And all the gopis stared at you, and you became completely terrified." Krishna says, "Liar, be quiet. Who is this pathetic Lalita?" Then he looks at Radha and he says, "Oh, golden complexioned girl, if you do not wish to pay us immediately, then please come and enter this mountain cave." Lalita stands between Krishna and Radha and says, "You rascal! Listen, even this girl's own husband cannot even touch the shadow of her lotus feet. And you know, her husband offers respect to her from a distance. Radha is the queen of all chaste girls. No man dares even to look at her. What to speak of touch her? So go away." Krishna says, "Madhu Mangal." And Madhu Mangal steps forward to speak on Krishna's behalf. And he says, "Lalita, Lalita, 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 stop being so proud. Ask your friend Radha who has heard from Durvasa Muni how my friend is a lifelong brahmachari. Subal adds, Madamangal is the son of a great sage, so you can believe everything he says. Krishna is fixed in celibacy and he's terrified of women. And the gopis look at him. And Arjuna Saka, he also adds, he said yes, because every time he hears the ankle bells of a young gopi, all the hair stands on end all over his body in fear. So Radha turns away from Krishna and she says, O suave, handsome boy, your fickle wit does not seem to be able to grasp the point. Why do you continue to try and grind husks? In other words, why are you continuing with your ideas? Then Krishna turns to Vrinda and he calls her close and he says, Vrinda, look. Look at Radha's face. Her face is beaming. Although she slanders me, she attracts my love hundreds of times more than if she respected me. Meanwhile, Lalita steps forward and says, you are the prince of Gokul. We have no objection to that. But if you cross the limits of moral conduct and act improperly, we cannot neglect our duty. Arjuna Saka says, what is your duty? And Lalita says, protecting Vrindavan from gopas. What else would be our duty? Vishakha says, Lalita, our dear queen of Vrindavan has given an order. The emperor, Mahamanmata, gave so many orders, and Krishna, what could he do? He was shackled to the order of the emperor. And now, Vishakha says, that the queen of Vrindavan is herself wishing to give an order. Lalita says, what is the queen's order? Vishakha says, Queen of Vrindavan says that these impudent boys fill their bellies with fruit and they adorn their bodies with flowers. They tend millions and millions of cows, and those cows devour the plants and grasses of Vrindavan. So in this way, they are destroying Vrindavan. And so, they should stop immediately, or they should pay a toll in compensation. Ha! Thank you. Madhumangal says, this is ridiculous. You twist the facts. Take a vow of silence. This is ridiculous. It is due to the kindness of my friend that people like you, even though you don't give anything, because of his kind-heartedness, he allows you to live here in his forest of Vrindavan. And Champakalata says, sir, you are not very civilized because you keep talking and talking without thinking. Lalita says, Sakhi, don't blame him. He is both ignorant of the Shruti and the Smriti Shastras, and therefore they are supposed to be his eyes, therefore he's blind. And therefore he doesn't hear what is being said, and he doesn't remember what he has seen. Vishakha turns to Nandi Mukhi and says, Nandi, do you remember our dear friend's grand coronation and Abhishek? Now here, at this part of this wonderful play, Srila Rupa Goswami is going to describe the coronation of Srimati Radharani as the Empress of Vrindavan. And later, at Srila Rupa Goswami's request, Srila Jiva Goswami took this brief description of this particular pastime and he filled it out with his own transcendental inner vision and his transcendental realizations at the request of Srila Rupa Goswami. And he composed a beautiful work called Sri Madhav Mahotsav. And in that wonderful pastime, Krishna wishes to glorify Srimati Radharani by performing an Abhishek and coronating her. And at that time, Purnamasi was the presiding personality. Anandi Mukhi, because she is the granddaughter of Purnamasi, so she remembers very well this wonderful occasion. So Nandi Mukhi begins to tell Chitra. She says, Chitra, listen. Vrinda went to Purnamasi and she said, O Yogeshwari, Radha should be made the queen of Vrindavan. A disembodied voice told me this. Vrinda says to herself quietly, under her breath, she says, that voice was only a trick. Krishna told me to do that. Nandi Mukhi says, and then, after she had been told to perform this coronation, Purnamasi invoked the presence of five demigoddesses, five devis. And then Chitra says, who were they? And Vrinda says, the first Devi was the daughter of Devaki, who is sometimes known as Ekanamsa. The second goddess who came and the third goddess were both the wives of the sun god Vivishwan. And his wives' names are Sandhya and Chaya. So Sandhya and Chaya came. And the fourth one was the sun god's daughter, Jamuna. And the fifth goddess was Manasi Ganga. So these five goddesses came. And Chaya said to Purnamasi, O Purnamasi, we accept your orders upon our heads. Yet, knowing the glories of Radha, we wonder, what is this 32-mile Vrindavan in comparison with Radha's glories? Nandamukhi said, when I heard this, I was not quite satisfied because Chaya did not understand the glories of Vrindavan. She understood the glories of Srimati Radharani, but she did not understand the glories of Vrindavan. So then Chitra asks, then what happened? Nandi Mukhi says, all of a sudden, there was a shower of celestial flowers. And Jamuna Devi looked up, and she saw up in the clouds, she saw Sarasvati, and she said, O respected Purnamasi, Our dear friend Sarasvati is also eager to come, but she was not invited, and now she shyly stands, holding a divine basket. Please, bring her here. So Purnamasi respectfully invited Sarasvati, and she also came. She is the daughter of Lord Brahma, and she was carrying this beautiful basket, a divine celestial basket. And when she arrived, Vrinda now starts to interrupt. Nandimukhi is telling this very slowly, and Vrinda gets really excited and takes over. And she says, yes, Sarasvati came, and she said, through me, because she's carrying the basket, many demigoddesses want to offer their gifts. So she said, Savitri offers a lotus garland. Sachi, Indra's wife, offers a beautiful golden tiara. Kuvera's wife offers jeweled ornaments. And Varuna's wife offers a parasol to hold above the queen of Vrindavan. And Vayu's wife, the wind god, offers two chamaras, divine chamaras, to fan Srimati Radharani. And Swaha gives these two beautiful divine garments made of silk, whereas Yamaraja's wife offers this jeweled mirror. So all these gifts were offered by Sarasvati. Then, when all these gifts were given to Sri Radha, a tumult of celestial music began. And the Gandharvas up in the clouds sang with joy, and the Apsaras in the clouds also danced. And the wives of the demigods began this wonderful coronation ceremony. Now, Vrinda, having interrupted Nandimukhi, she now feels a little bit shy because she got a little bit overcome. So she looks at Nandimukhi, who's looking at her, and Chitra says, then what happened next? And then Vrinda lets Nandimukhi speak again. So Nandimukhi says, while Vrajendra Nandan was blissfully watching all of this, you Sakhis seated Radha on a golden throne. And then you performed a Maha Abhishek with many gem-studded pots, gold pots glistening with gems. And the gopis poured this water with different fragrances and herbs and so many special ingredients. They poured this water over Srimati Radharani as she sat on a jeweled throne. And then, on the order of Purnamasi, the sovereignty of the whole of Vrindavan was conferred upon Radha. Then Saraswati raised her hand and she said, my mother Savitri affectionately sends this fragrant garland. And she showed a beautiful garland of divine celestial flowers. And Ekanamsa, Durga, she took that garland, right? And she took the garland and she placed it on Krishna's neck. And Jamuna smiled and said, just see the nature of family affection. It makes one forget proper behavior. Now, why did she say that? Because the child of Devaki is the sister of Krishna. So when she was supposed to give the garland to Radha, instead, out of her love for Krishna, she gave the garland to Krishna. And Jamuna said, then Ekanamsa said, how did I act without thinking? And she said, O Devi, this fragrant garland was meant for our sister Radhika. Why did you offer it instead to your brother Krishna? And hearing this, Ekanamsa laughed very loudly. And she joyfully removed the garland from Hari's neck. And as she took the garland, she also caught one of his necklaces. She removed the garland and the necklace from Krishna's neck. And she took them over and placed them on the neck of Radha. Then Jamuna said, "What is the use of this necklace?" Seeing Krishna's necklace. And she said, "This necklace is the associate of one who is very hard-hearted." And Ekanamsa, no, and Jamuna then carefully removed Radha's necklace, not Krishna's necklace, and took Radha's necklace and brought it back and put it on Krishna. So then Lalita said, "Then Radha's forehead was decorated with tilak, made from the musk from Krishna's chest. And noble Purnamasi then joyfully said, 'O blossoming trees of Vrindavan, enjoy pastimes with your wives, the vines. And O bees, join with the birds and make this place a happy place for pastimes. O animals, please make everything in Vrindavan very, very charming.' For accompanied by her friends, who are the generals in command of her armies, appointing Vrinda as her prime minister, Radha now rules Vrindavan." Hari Bol! Hearing this, Vrinda is stunned with bliss. And Kundalata became very excited at that time. Kundalata became very excited. Chitra became fully satisfied. Lalita and Champakalata and Vishakha were full of joy. Nandamukhi is telling this, right? Those are the gopis who are present now in front of Krishna. So she's reminding them how happy they were when Radha became the queen. Then Nandamukhi, Lalita says, "Nandamukhi, did you forget what the goddess Jamuna said?" Nandamukhi said, "How could I forget? The goddess Jamuna said, 'From this day forward, our dear friends, headed by Lalita, can happily pick any flowers they want in all the pastime forests.'" Vrinda, glancing at Radha, then says, "We cannot forget how Goddess Durga decorated your forehead with designs drawn in fragrant ointments, or how Chaya decorated you with a flower crown, or Samja and her friends decorated your braid, or Manasi Ganga and Jamuna fanned you with those chamaras, and Sarasvati herself held a jeweled parasol." Radha's becoming a bit shy and she says, Vrinda, stop." And Krishna, listening to all of this, is thinking and thinking, and remembering that wonderful occasion. And he said, wanting to constantly look at Radha, I fixed my gaze upon her. But then seeing all these demigoddesses present, I became shy and I lowered my face. And at that moment, I saw Radha reflected in my Kustaba gem. And I found myself staggering with joy. Subal says, Arjuna, people call the site of Radha's coronation Unmad Radha, because that is where Radha's joy knew no bounds. Mother Mangal says, I remember everything, my friend. Actually, these gopis are not at all falsely proud. Then Radha says, in the mood of the Empress of Vrindavan, Radha says, Sakhi Vrinda, who was Vrinda? She was her prime minister. Sakhi Vrinda, please count the tax that these boys owe for the past 8 years. Because Krishna, some of the acharyas say, was 8 years old when this pastime took place, and therefore he hadn't paid any tax before. Now he should pay. So Vrinda said, O Queen of Vrindavan, the forest tax for the numberless gopas, each tending billions of cows, is unlimited. What is the use to try to calculate that? Lalita said, Vishakha, the Empress of Vrindavan now requests that you, Vishakha, should forcibly remove the jeweled ornaments of this Brahmana boy who thinks himself extremely clever. And Madhu Mangal says to Krishna, my friend, I think it's going to be very difficult to settle this matter peacefully. I think the only recourse left to us is to flee. Krishna says, O cowardly one, why do you shrink in fear of Lalita's stick? I am the Sudarshan Chakra, standing in front of these gopis. Now this word Sudarshan means the chakra, right? But Sudarshan means the most wonderful, beautiful form standing in front of these gopis. And Radha says, Subal, stop being so shameless and submit the forest tax. Now Krishna is never one to be defeated, right? So Krishna says, looking at Radha with a very sweet smile, he says, Radha, it is true that you are the queen of one forest, Vrindavan. But the great emperor, Mahamanmata the Great, is the king of 12 forests. And your realm is very small, whereas his realm includes everything that exists within the three worlds. So you are a vassal and a subordinate ruler. Therefore, Radha, listen to what is best for you and do not dare to ask or challenge the emperor to pay any tax. Vishakha says, so be it, that's okay. The emperor should not pay tax. But how will the emperor's toll gate supervisor, the emperor's order carrier, how will he be absolved from his tax? By taxing, he has to pay his tax to our dear friend, the Empress of Vrindavan. Subal says, Vishakha, you are such a fool. You stagger around like a crazy girl in a daze. You talk on and on and on and on, but you don't know anything. Vishakha wildly laughs and she says, what is it that I don't know? Tell me, I'm listening. And Subal says, what is the use of speaking so much? Hear the essence. The great emperor, Maha Manmatha the Great, has now assumed the form of our dear friend. Ultimately, there is no difference between them. Arjuna says, Vishakha, this is just a fraction of his glory. Whose pride would not be reduced if they were to see the grand Govinda Abhishek, another festival, a much more wonderful festival. Who has not seen that wonderful Govinda Abhishek that the gopis actually did not see, but the cowherd boys saw it when Krishna was crowned the king of Vrindavan by, he was became Govinda, the master of the cows at Govinda Kund. So Arjuna and all the Sakas, they saw this wonderful festival and they say, our dear friend was crowned the king of all of Gokul at this festival, and the abundance of that festival outshines all others. Madhumangal says, too bad, Lalita. Arjuna spoke correctly. Even the Vedas say, this forest is known as Krishnavan. And at this particular point, we will finish our reading for tonight. Hare Krishna. Thank you.